And now, the Tri-County Radio Dramas. TCRD is Groots' number one radio program for short stories and spooky tales. From an old town with a queer history, we dramatize the deepest fantasies of mankind, bringing life to the unknown, the unwanted, and the unholy. We tell you this in earnest, so if you would like to avoid the fear and excitement brought on by such a program, we urge politely, yet assertively, for you to turn off your radio now. But first, a quick word from our sponsors. Do you have coffee stains, grass stains, wine stains, in your rug, on your bed, in your clothes? Then try Chicago Blue. Chicago Blue prides itself on being able to remove any stain from any surface. Chicago Blue, the world's most trusted stain remover. And KC Cola, a cool, refreshing drink perfect for any occasion. Dad likes to crack open a cold KC when he gets home from the office. Mom likes to sip on a KC as she goes about her wifely duties. Even the children love to drink KC during their lunch hour at school. KC Cola, 21 delicious flavors, one unique taste. And now, give a warm welcome and open your homes to our host, the Reverend Bob Bridgehand. Hello, good morning, and may you have tuned in today in good faith. I'm your host, Bob Bridgen, and we're coming at you live from good old Minskin, the biggest city not on the map. Today's report is a long-form report about camaraderie, hatred, and lies. But before we get to that, allow us to take the beginning of this program to read our bulletins and notices of the week. First and foremost, keeping up with the hepatitis outbreak ravaging Lilyville District, this new strain has been dubbed Hepatitis K, or Hep K for short. It actually seems that now Lilyville District isn't all that's at risk. Minskanite health officials estimate about 10% of all of Henry County is already infected, with Lilyville and Ashbury districts being at a considerably higher risk than Granttown District. Health officials have also determined, due to a staggeringly high rising fatalities, that this new strain of hepatitis has only a 60% survival rate. And of those who do manage to survive, 50% are left in a permanent chronic condition. Scary times, please be safe. Health officials also estimate that we are far from the end of this crisis. Moreover, the Black Branch Men's Bible College is holding a Holy Ghost competition this upcoming weekend. If you fancy yourself a super religious person, then boy, could this be the competition for you. From their flyer, quote, "Get in touch with the Lord. Praise the Lord with loudness. Whoever can channel the Holy Ghost strong enough, physically, actually, and really, will win the competition. The prize is a lifetime of Bibles." Unquote. We asked them what constitutes for a lifetime of Bibles, and when they sent us this advert, all they told us was, "You will never run out of Bibles again." Also, the Minda County Police Department have issued a warning for suspicious ice cream men, officially only in Joburg District so far, though there have been a few reports in Crossroadsville District and even fewer in Pine Valley District. There are ice cream men with unknown motives. They have very large carts and implore children to reach very deeply into them, sometimes even asking the children to crawl inside. When asked for a food license, they will produce a large bulk of certificates, licenses, and even a few college degrees, but not a single one of them will have an actual food license. They refuse to answer any questions, and no one knows what they want. Don't trust them. Lastly, for y'all sports fans out there, in the second quarterfinal block for Ultra Cup 58, we saw the Rosebuds very unsurprisingly beat the Serpents with a spare of 4. And then we saw a very close game between the Deep and the Ghouls, which ended in a tie. And then in overtime, it ended in a second tie, with the Ghouls winning, finally, in the second overtime with a spare of 2. Had me on the edge of my seat for the entire hour. So that means that we're going to see in the semifinals the Granttown Rosebuds going against the Lilyville Ghouls, and the VSA Rothkos, unbelievably, going against the Groots of One Healers. And now, we'll go ahead and move on to our report of the week. The Black Cat, as reported by Edgar Allan Poe. For the most wild yet most homely narrative which I am about to pen, I neither expect nor solicit belief. Mad indeed would I be to expect it, in a case where my very senses reject their own evidence. Yet mad am I not, and very surely do I not dream. But tomorrow I die, and today I would unburthen my soul. My immediate purpose is to place before the world, plainly, succinctly, and without comment, a series of mere household events. In their consequences, these events have terrified, have tortured, have destroyed me. Yet I will not attempt to expound them. To me, they have presented little but horror. To many, they will seem less terrible than baroques. Hereafter, perhaps some intellect may be found which will reduce my phantasm to the commonplace, some intellect more calm, more logical, and far less excitable than my own, which will perceive, in the circumstances I detail with awe, nothing more than an ordinary succession of very natural causes and effects. From my infancy, I was noted for the docility and humanity of my disposition. My tenderness of heart was even so conspicuous as to make me the jest of my companions. I was especially fond of animals and was indulged by my parents with a great variety of pets. With these I spent most of my time and never was so happy as when feeding and caressing them. This peculiarity of my character grew with my growth, and in my manhood I derived from it one of my principal sources of pleasure. To those who have cherished an affection for a faithful and sagacious dog, I need hardly be at the trouble of explaining the nature or the intensity of the gratification thus derivable. There is something in the unselfish and self-sacrificing love of a brute, which goes directly to the heart of him who has had frequent occasion to test the paltry friendship and gossamer fidelity of mere man. I married early and was happy to find in my wife a disposition not uncongenial with my own. Observing my partiality for domestic pets, she lost no opportunity of procuring those of the most agreeable kind. We had birds, goldfish, a fine dog, rabbits, a small monkey, and a cat. This latter was a remarkably large and beautiful animal, entirely black and sagacious to an astonishing degree. In speaking of his intelligence, my wife, who, in her heart, was not a little tinctured with superstition, made frequent allusion to the ancient popular notion which regarded all black cats as witches in disguise. Not that she was ever serious upon this point, and I mention the matter at all for no better reason than that it happens, just now, to be remembered. Pluto, this was the cat's name, was my favorite pet and playmate. I alone fed him, and he attended me wherever I went about the house. It was even with difficulty that I could prevent him from following me through the streets. Our friendship lasted in this manner for several years, during which my general temperament and character, through the instrumentality of the fiend Intemperance, had, I blush to confess it, experienced a radical altercation for the worse. I grew day by day more moody, more irritable, more regardless of the feelings of others. I suffered myself to use intemperate language to my wife. At length I even offered her personal violence. My pets, of course, were made to feel the change in my disposition. I not only neglected, but ill-used them. For Pluto, however, I still retained sufficient regard to restrain me from maltreating him, as I made no scruple of maltreating the rabbits, the monkey, or even the dog, when by accident, or through affection, they came in my way. But my disease grew upon me, for what a disease is like alcohol! And at length, even Pluto, who is now becoming old and consequently somewhat peevish, even Pluto began to experience the effects of my ill temper. One night, returning home, much intoxicated from one of my haunts about the town, I fancied the cat that avoided my presence. I seized him, when in his fright at my violence he inflicted a slight wound upon my hand with his teeth. The fury of a demon instantly possessed me. I knew myself no longer. My original soul seemed at once to take flight from my body, and a more than fiendish malevolence, gin-nurtured, thrilled every fiber of my frame. I took from my waistcoat pocket a penknife, opened it, grasped the poor beast by the throat, and deliberately cut one of its eyes from the socket. I blush, I burn, I shudder, while I pen the damnable atrocity. When reason returned with me in the morning, when I had slept off the fumes of the night's debauch, I experienced a sentiment half of horror, half of remorse. for the crime of which I had been guilty, but it was at best a feeble and equivocal feeling, and the soul remained untouched. I again plunged into excess and soon drowned in wine all memory of the deed. In the meantime, the cat slowly recovered. The socket of the lost eye presented, it is true, a frightful appearance, but he no longer appeared to suffer any pain. He went about the house as usual, but, as might be expected, fled in extreme terror at my approach. I had so much of my old heart left as to be at first grieved by this evident dislike on the part of a creature which had once so loved me. But this feeling soon gave place to irritation, and then came, as if to my final and irrevocable overthrow, the spirit of perverseness. Of this spirit, philosophy takes no account, yet I am not more sure that my soul lives than I am that perverseness is one of the most primitive impulses of the human heart, one of the indivisible primary faculties or sentiments which give direction to the character of man. Who has not 100 times found himself committing a vile or a silly action for no other reason than because he knows he should not? Have we not a perpetual inclination in the teeth of our best judgment to violate that which is law, merely because we understand it to be such? This spirit of perverseness, I say, came to my final overthrow. It was this unfathomable longing of the soul to vex itself, to offer violence to its own nature, to do wrong for the wrong's sake only, that urged me to continue and finally to consummate the injury I had inflicted upon the unoffending brute. One morning in cold blood I slipped a noose about its neck and hung it to the limb of a tree. Hung it with the tears streaming from my eyes and with the bitterest remorse at my heart. Hung it because I knew that it had loved me and because I felt that it had given me no reason of offense. Hung it because I knew that in doing so I was committing a sin, a deadly sin that would so jeopardize my immortal soul as to place it, if such a thing were possible, even beyond the reach of the infinite mercy of the most merciful and most terrible God. On the night of the day which this cruel deed was done, I was aroused from sleep by the cry of fire. The curtains of my bed were in flames, the whole house was blazing. It was with great difficulty that my wife, a servant, and myself made our escape from the conflagration. The destruction was complete. My entire worldly worth was swallowed up, and I resigned myself thenceforward to despair. I am above the weakness of seeking to establish a sequence of cause and effect between the disaster and the atrocity, but I am detailing a chain of facts and wish not to leave even a possible link imperfect. On the day succeeding the fire, I visited the ruins. The walls, with one exception, had fallen in. This exception was found in a compartment wall, not very thick, which stood about the middle of the house, and against which had rested the head of my bed. The plastering had here, in great measure, resisted the action of the fire, a fact which I attributed to its having been recently spread. About this wall a dense crowd were collected, and many persons seemed to be examining a particular portion of it with very minute and eager attention. The words strange and singular and other similar expressions excited my curiosity. I approached and saw, as if graven in bas-relief upon the white surface, the figure of a gigantic cat. The impression was given with an accuracy truly marvelous. There was a rope about the animal's neck. When I first beheld this apparition, for I could scarcely regard it as less, my wonder and my terror were extreme. But at length reflection came to my aid. The cat, I remembered, had been hung in a garden adjacent to the house. Upon the alarm of the fire, this garden had been immediately filled by the crowd, by some of whom the animal must have been cut from the tree and thrown through an open window into my chamber. This had previously been done with the view of arousing me from sleep. The falling of other walls had compressed the victim of my cruelty into the substance of the freshly spread plaster, the lime of which, with the flames and the ammonia from the carcass, had then accomplished the portraiture as I saw it. Although I thus readily accounted to my reason, if not altogether to my conscience, for the startling fact just detailed. It did not the less fail to make a deep impression upon my fancy. For months I could not rid myself of the phantasm of the cat, and during this period there came back into my spirit a half-sentimental that deemed, but was not, remorse. I went so far as to regret the loss of the animal, and to look about me, among the vile haunts which I now habitually frequented, for another pet of the same species, and of somewhat similar appearance, with which to supply its place. One night, as I sat, half stupefied, in a den of more than infamy, my attention was suddenly drawn to some black object, reposing upon the head of one of the immense hogsheads of gin or of rum which constituted the chief furniture of the apartment. I had been looking steadily at the top of this hogshead for some minutes, and what now caused me surprise was the fact that I had not sooner perceived the object thereupon. I approached it and touched it with my hand. It was a black cat, a very large one, fully as large as Pluto, and closely resembling him in every respect but one. Pluto had not a white hair upon any portion of his body, but this cat had a large, although indefinite, splotch of white, covering nearly the whole region of its breast. Upon my touching him, he immediately arose, purred loudly, rubbed against my hand, and appeared delighted with my notice. This, then, was the very creature of which I was in search. I at once offered to purchase it off the landlord, but this person made no claim to it, knew nothing of it, had never seen it before. I continued my caresses, and when I prepared to go home, the animal evinced a disposition to accompany me. I permitted it to do so, occasionally stooping and patting as it proceeded. When it reached the house, it domesticated itself at once, and became immediately a great favorite with my wife. For my own part, I soon found a dislike to it arising within me. This was just the reverse of what I had anticipated, but I know not how or why it was. Its evident fondness for myself rather disgusted and annoyed. By slow degrees, these feelings of disgust and annoyance rose into the bitterness of hatred. I avoided the creature, a certain sense of shame, and the remembrance of my former deed of cruelty, preventing me from physically abusing it. I did not, for some weeks, strike or otherwise violently ill-use it, but gradually, very gradually, I came to look upon it with unutterable loathing, and to flee silently from its odious presence, as from the breath of a pestilence. What added, no doubt, to my hatred of the beast was the discovery, on the morning after I brought it home, that, like Pluto, it had also been deprived of one of its eyes. This circumstance, however, only endeared it to my wife, who, as I have already said, possessed, in a high degree, that humanity of feeling which had once been my distinguishing trait, and the source of many of my simplest and purest pleasures. With my aversion to this cat, however, its partiality for myself seemed to increase. It followed my footsteps with a pertinacity which it would be difficult to make the reader comprehend. Whenever I sat, it would crouch beneath my chair, or spring upon my knees, covering me with its loathsome caresses. If I arose to walk, it would get between my feet and thus nearly throw me down, or fasten its long and sharp claws to my dress, clamber in this manner to my breast. At such times, although I longed to destroy it with such a blow, I was yet withheld from doing so, partly by memory of my former crime, but chiefly, let me confess it, at once, by absolute dread of the beast. This dread was not exactly a dread of physical evil, and yet I should be at a loss how otherwise to define it. I am almost ashamed to own, yes, even in this felon's cell, I am almost ashamed to own, that the terror and horror with which this animal inspired me have been heightened by one of the merest chimeras it would be possible to conceive. My wife had called my attention more than once to the character of the mark of white hair, of which I have spoken, and which constituted to the sole visible difference between the strange beast and the one I had destroyed. The reader will remember that this mark, although large, had been originally very indefinite, but by slow degrees nearly imperceptible, and which for a long time my reason struggled to reject as fanciful, it had, at length, assumed a rigorous distinctness of outline. It was now the representation of an object that I shuddered to name, and for this, above all, I loathed, I dreaded, and would have rid myself of the monster had I dared. It was. Now, I say the image of a hideous, of a ghastly thing of the gallows. Oh, mournful and terrible engine of horror and crime, of agony and death. And now I was indeed wretched beyond the wretchedness of mere humanity. And a brute beast, whose fellow I had contemptuously destroyed, a brute beast to work out for me as a man, fashioned in the image of the high God. So much of insufferable woe. Alas, neither by day nor night I knew the blessing of rest any more. During the former, the creature left me no moment alone, and in the latter I stared hourly from dreams of unutterable fear, to find the hot breath of the thing upon my face and its vast weight, an incarnate nightmare that I had no power to shake off, incumbent internally upon my heart. Beneath the pressure of torments such as these, the feeble remnant of good within me succumbed. Evil thoughts became my sole intimates, the darkest and most evil of thoughts. The moodiness of my usual temper increased to hatred of all things and of all mankind, while from the sudden, frequent, and ungovernable outburst of fury which I now blindly abandoned myself, my accompanying wife, alas, was the most usual and the most patient of sufferers. One day, she accompanied me upon some household errand into the cellar of the building which our poverty had compelled us to inhabit. The cat followed me down the stairs and, nearly throwing me headlong, exasperated me to madness, uplifting an axe and forgetting in my wrath the childish dread which had hitherto strayed my hand. I aimed the blow at the animal, which of course would have proved instantly fatal had it descended as I wished, but this blow was arrested by the hand of my wife. Goaded by the interference into a rage more than demoniacal, I withdrew my arm from her grasp and buried the axe in her brain. She fell dead upon the spot. Without a groan, this hideous murder accomplished, I sat myself forthwith and with entire deliberation to the task of concealing the body. I knew that I could not remove it from the house, either by day or by night, without the risk of being observed by the neighbors. Many projects entered my mind. At one period, I thought of cutting the corpse into minute fragments and destroying them by fire. At another, I resolved to dig a grave for it in the floor of the cellar. Again, I deliberated about casting it in the well in the yard, about packing it in a box as if merchandise, with the usual arrangements, and getting a porter to take it from the house. Finally, I hit upon what I considered a far better expedient than either of these. I determined to wall it up in the cellar, as the monks of the Middle Ages are recorded to have walled up their victims. For a purpose such as this, the cellar was well adapted. Its walls were loosely constructed, and had been plastered throughout with a rough plaster which the dampness of the atmosphere had prevented from hardening. Moreover, in one of the walls was a projection caused by a false chimney, or fireplace, that had been filled up and made to resemble the rest of the cellar. I made no doubt that I could readily displace the bricks at this point, insert the corpse, and wall up the hole as before, so that no eye should detect anything suspicious. And in this calculation I was not deceived. By means of a crowbar I easily dislodged the bricks, and having carefully deposited the body against the inner wall, I propped it in that position, with which little trouble I relaid the whole structure as it originally stood. Having procured mortar, sand, and hair with every possible precaution, I prepared a plaster which could not be distinguished from the old, and with this I very carefully went over the new brickwork. When I had finished, I felt satisfied that all was right. The wall did not present itself slightest appearance of having been disturbed. The rubbish on the floor was picked up with the minutest care. I looked around triumphantly and said to myself, "Here, at least then, my labor has not been in vain." My next step was to look for the beast which had caused so much of the wretchedness, for I had at length firmly resolved to put it to death. Had I been able to meet it at the moment, there would have been no doubt of its fate. But it appeared that the crafty animal had been alarmed at the violence of my previous anger, and forbore to present itself in my present mood. It is impossible to describe or to imagine the deep, the blissful sense of relief which the absence of the detested creature occasioned in my bosom. Did not make its appearance during the night, and thus for one night, at least, since its introduction into the house, I sound and tranquilly slept. I slept even with the burden of my murder upon my soul. The second And the third day passed, and still my tormentor came not. Once again I breathed as a free man. The monster, in terror, had fled the premises forever. I should behold it no more. My happiness was supreme. The guilt of my dark deed disturbed me but little. Some few inquiries had been made, but these had readily been answered. Even a search had been instituted, but of course nothing was to be discovered. I looked upon my future felicity as secured. Upon the fourth day of the assassination, a party of the police came, very unexpectedly, into the house, and proceeded again to make rigorous investigation of the premises. Secure, however, in the inscrutability of my place of concealment, I felt no embarrassment whatsoever. The officers bade me accompany them in their search. They left no nook or corner unexplored. At length, for the third or fourth time, they descended into the cellar. I quivered not in a muscle. My heart beat calmly as that who slumbers in innocence. I walked into the cellar, from end to end. I folded my arms upon my bosom and roamed easily to and fro. The police were thoroughly satisfied and prepared to depart. The glee at my heart was too strong to be restrained. I burned to say if but one word by way of triumph, and to render doubly sure their assurance of my guiltlessness. "Gentlemen," I said at least, "gentlemen," I said, as the party ascended the steps, "I delight to have allayed your suspicions. I wish you all health and a little more courtesy. By the by, gentlemen, this is a very well constructed house." In the rabid desire to say something easily, I scarcely knew what I uttered at all. "I may say an excellently well-constructed house. These walls are you going, gentlemen? These walls are solidly put together." And here, through no more than the frenzy of bravado, I rapped heavily with the cane which I held in my hand upon that very portion of the brickwork behind which stood the corpse of the wife of my bosom. But may God shield and deliver me from the fangs of the arch-fiend. No sooner than had the reverberation of my blow sunk into silence than I was answered by a voice from within the tomb, by a cry at first muffled and broken, like the sobbing of a child, and then quickly swelling into one long, loud, and continuous scream, utterly anomalous and inhuman, a howl, a wailing shriek, half of horror and half of triumph, such as might have arisen only out of hell, conjointly from the throats of the damned in their agony and of the demons that exult in the damnation. Of my own thoughts it is folly to speak. Swooning, I staggered to the opposite wall. For one instant the party upon the stairs remained motionless, through extremity of terror and of awe. In the next a dozen stout arms were toiling at the wall. It fell bodily. The corpse, already greatly decayed and clotted with gore, stood erect before the eyes of the spectators. Upon its head, with red extended mouth and solitary eyes of fire, sat the hideous beast whose craft had seduced me in the murder, and whose informing voice had consigned me to the hangman. I had walled the monster up within the tomb. Wow, how rude for the reporter to not let us know whether or not that man was found guilty. I guess I'll have to check in later with another news channel to see if someone knows what's up with him. I apologize to y'all for not doing my fullest. I really should have seen that I had all the facts or not before starting this report. I failed y'all as a journalist, and I plan on making up for that again. Sorry. If any of y'all know what happened to Buddy out there, please call us up and let us know. You can call us at 173-555-0909. That's 173-555-0909. Or just shoot us an email at tcrd@mail.com. That's tcrd@mail.com. Well, that's all we got for today's program. Be sure to tune in next time to the TCRD. And until then, take it easy, have a good week, and God bless. TCRD is written and directed by ZC Loki and is hosted by the Reverend Bob Bridgehand. TCRD is brought to you by Tri-County Radio, the only radio station worth the hoot in all of Minskin Tri-County City. This ends our scheduled programming for the day. Be sure to tune in tomorrow at 7 a.m. to begin your day with TCR News. Have a blessed night.